Boo. Movies on up.
I don't think I'm going to do that. Because you already did it.
We should just do that every episode now. If you did it this one, it would look like I'm copying you because this is like...
This will go up before.
Two weeks before.
Yeah.
This is this week's, I think. Right?
Yeah. This isn't even October.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to do that. Definitely. What's up? This is Movies on Up, the ultimate in sight and sound. In addition to just being a true fact, that is also our tagline for this week, the ultimate in sight and sound. I can see him, and you'll be able to hear him, sight and sound. Mr. Dave Bisella.
Yeah, I was going to sing clippets of a song from a movie, but I don't know if
you can hum them.
I don't know any. I was just thinking, be your best, be your best. Put your
be our guest
to the is that what it is?
Yeah, it's be our guest. And
I was just saying what I sing to myself in the mirror every morning.
Do your best. Do your best.
Be the best. Be the best.
Yeah. All right. Now we're completely off the rails.
I don't even know if that's the right movie.
No, it isn't. Not at all. It's from the right studio, and they're both animated films, so you're on the right track. But don't listen to Dave because he's wrong. Listen to me, Ryan, because I am right, and I'm looking at the movie right now. If you think you know what movie the ultimate in sight and sound comes from, and it is a Disney movie, send your guess to us in one of the following ways, via email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can send your guess to us via the Twitter box, @moviesonup on Twitter, or leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, you could win a fantastic prize package full of all sorts of things. Probably no brooms, though.
Nope.
those were hints.
It'll be the best.
Yes. Oh, my God. At any rate, we're going to be doing our fantasy film ball draft next week. Dave and I are really lazy, so we thought, hey, what the hell? Let's just stay right with the theme. So we picked our favorite fantasy movies.
And there's crap coming out that we could theme anything
with. That's true, too. And we are really lazy. So if there's nothing that we can glom onto in theaters or DVD, then we're kind of screwed. So we just kind of copied off ourselves, I guess. Sometimes when we do these lists, we invent genres that don't actually exist, and that makes it really, really difficult. This week, there is a pretty large genre of movies called fantasy movies, but I really wouldn't say that I picked any of them.
I did. And I,
good.
This movie I did no research on. Usually I'll come up with what I have on my head and then I'll,
Is Your Highness on your list?
It's number one.
Excellent.
But I was going to be number one, but it's my favorite sword and sandal movie. So I skipped it. I usually come up with like the ones that come up to me off the top of my head. Then I do a little research to see if I missed any. This one, I didn't bother doing any research. I came up with about 9 or 10 right off top of my head. And I thought, it's good enough. So mine are all pretty obvious, which I usually try to avoid. If you've ever heard me talk, you could pretty much guess what my number one is going to be this week and probably my number two. So there's no real surprises this episode. So if you want to hear me gush about Warwick Davis,
that's coming.
Hang out for a little bit.
I really put together three different lists. The first one would have been very similar to what you had, fantasy-type movies. And then I thought, well, no, let me outsmart the room here and pick movies that are about someone fantasizing about somebody else.
So Weird Science.
Yeah, Weird Science would have been on there. And then I was like, no, let's just kind of make it a little more broad. So my movies are all about imagination. That's fantasy. It takes a very active imagination to come up with Willow and movies of that ilk.
Spoiler alert.
It's probably not your number five, but I'm dying to know what is your number five, fifth favorite fantasy movie of all time.
My number five, just as obvious as my number one, from 1986, directed by Jim Henson, starring the lovely David Bowie and the beautiful Jennifer Connelly. It is Labyrinth.
Package.
Yes, his package is huge in that movie. And all around, I don't think it was stuffed. Labyrinth. This is a very cool movie. Still, very cool that Jim Henson directed it. Because he made a mark on creating a lot of things, but him actually directing this was very cool. And it feels like the kind of project Jim Henson would direct. You have Jennifer Connelly wishes away her little baby, what is it, brother?
Brother, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and David Bowie steals him and then says, hey, you got to complete my labyrinth, which that made me learn that labyrinth also stands for maze, or means maze. So, yeah, you know, so many hours to complete the labyrinth.
Thank you, Jim Henson.
Yeah, and it's just very, very Very cool movie. Very cool creatures that all look cool. Jennifer Connelly, I mean, she's a top quality actress, and that was, she didn't grow into it. She started that way. She's great in this movie. It has like a horror type feel. Like, she is kind of a scream queen in this. Like, that she has a lot of the same qualities that, you know, your Nancys or anything else from horror movies have, where she's coming across a lot of crazy stuff that she's got to get through and just buck up and do it. And then Bowie's just one of the coolest dudes alive. And he's very Bowie in this. I mean, this is a very, very Bowie movie. I generally don't like songs mixing in with my movies. Like, I'm not a big musical fan, but when Bowie does it, it works. So, I mean, Labyrinth, it's an obvious choice, and generally on these lists, I try to not do the obvious ones, but all of them are obvious, and I love all these movies because I love Labyrinth a lot, and it's my number five. So this is probably one of the lists where the movies I'm going to talk about, I absolutely adore, where there's usually a couple that are just like, eh, they made the cut.
I mean, I can honestly say the same thing about all of my movies. I like them a lot, but they are going to be very different from yours. My number five, a relatively recent movie. This feels like a Dave pick because it's relatively recent. It's an English movie directed by Sean Ellis. It's Cashback, starring Sean Biggerstaff, Amelia Fox, Stuart Goodwin. Basically, what you have here is Sean Biggerstaff works at like a grocery store, works the night shift, and he gets real bored. So his imagination, he allows essentially time to stop, and then he just kind of goes on about creating all sorts of mischief, and he's an artist, so he draws a lot of people. What he draws, it's a still because he's imagined that he can stop time. And then it kind of goes into his relationships with his friends and with some of the folks that he meets while time is stopped. I think it's really kind of a neat flick. This was one of the greatest examples of what Netflix ends up being for me. A movie I had heard nothing about.
Fun fact about this movie, sure. 100% of the males that have watched this movie
love it.
Watch it only because of the girl on the front. That's what gets your attention.
And
she's in it for like 2 seconds, but
yeah,
it's
but
glorious.
You won't be disappointed at all. Actually, I think like I sent my buddy a message. I was like, hey, man, you need to watch this movie. And not because like I know that you like movies, but I know that you like naked chicks. And I guess, you know, you can use your imagination if you were to be able to stop time and, you know, there was a relatively good-looking young lady in your grocery store. I don't know. Maybe that's one of the things you do if you were a creep. But Cashback, an interesting way to use your imagination to kind of will things to happen. And that might be a theme going on later in some of my other movies.
It's a cool movie. It was based on a short film. The short film was only about 15 minutes. And if you watch it, the point gets put across in the short film.
Yeah, the short came out in 2004. The movie was 2006.
And it's one of those things where if I'd have seen the short in 2004, I would have no idea how they would make a feature length out of it. But they made it work. It's a very cool movie. This is a very me pick because I wasn't thinking imagination, but now I almost just want to do a list of imagination movies.
Well, we're not going to because I've already done that list.
This was pretty cool. I really like this movie. And I really like the girl on the cover.
She's not bad.
My number four, another popular fantasy movie that when you hear popular fantasy movies, you probably think of probably my top five because mine are probably some of the most popular. But it's from 1985, just a year before Labyrinth, starring a young Tom Cruise and Mia Sara, who I've always had a giant. 80s Mia Sara to me is like perfection. I love Mia Sara.
80s Tom Cruise isn't bad either.
Oh, no, no. They would have made beautiful babies, but then Tim Curry would have tried to creep them out. It is Ridley Scott's Legend. Mia Sara's beautiful. Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise. Like, he's great in this movie. There's cool effects. It's all about a unicorn's horn. And Tim Curry steals the movie as the Lord of Darkness. He is phenomenal. It's just very cool because it is a very fantastical movie. It's, you know, you have unicorns, you have darkness, the Prince of Darkness, you have all sorts of cool stuff, and it doesn't come off as hokey, I don't think, and that's the thing that, like, okay, Neverending Story, some of it comes off as hokey, but it was still a cool movie that, you know, was and also ran for me. But Legend's just very, very cool, and it's dark. I mean, the witches are creepy. Tim Curry's creepy. My kids love this movie. I randomly DVR'd it off one of the movie channels and just watched it because they saw like 5 minutes of it and wanted to watch it. And they absolutely adore this movie. And it's, you know, damn near 30 years old. So I think that says a lot about it. Because when you watch it, it is a fantasy movie, but it doesn't feel super dated. And I think Labyrinth is similar. Like, they don't feel like super 80s movies. And a lot of that is because of the fantasy setting. So, you know, it's kind of a timeless setting, and Labyrinth and Legend both kind of pull off that timelessness of it.
I like this one a lot. This was on my first list. And yeah, the Lord of Darkness is the way they depict that character is really, really rad. It's one of it's the thing that sticks out to me the most about that movie. And, you know, if there is a devil, I assume that that's what he looks like, because he looks so awesome in that movie. Thinking about Legend kind of takes me down a little bit of a rabbit hole, and there may be some other movies that are on your list, but there's one movie that I always kind of, maybe it's because I saw them both at about the same time, but I tend to link them together, and in case it doesn't show up on your list, I'll mention it at the end.
Is it Lady Hawk?
No, it's not Lady Hawk. It's not Top Gun either. My number four is another one of my weirdo picks. I don't know if you've seen this one, but I have a feeling that if you have seen, Michelle Gondry's Science of Sleep from 2006. You may kind of dig it. Stars Gael Garcia Bernal and Charlotte Gainsbourg. It's a movie about dreams. So it's very much set up like a dream. It's sort of stream of conscious. It doesn't necessarily follow a very linear storyline, but it is about Bernal's character who falls in love with Charlotte Gainsbourg, who lives across the hall from him. And while he's dreaming, he's kind of got this narrative of how they're going to be together, and he can't necessarily seem to marry his dream narrative with the realities of life. So he kind of tends to retreat to the dreams, because that's where he's more happy. It's the visuals in this movie, as you would expect from a movie that is about dreams, are really incredible. Some of the stuff that they do with building little dioramas, they're building dioramas out of like plastic and cardboard, and how they kind of phase in and out of these scenes, I think is really kind of rad. You know, I watched it, I paid attention to it, and I'm still not sure I know what the hell was going on, especially the ending. I'm certain I don't know what the hell happened, but this is one of those movies. The term I use for them is color forms. Like, you can have it on in the background, and if you're doing something else, you can look up and be like, wow, that's pretty. And yeah, sure, you're not going to catch the plot, but I'm not 100% certain if you're really buckled down, you're going to catch it anyway. But, you know, at the very least, it's really a cool movie to look at. Very imaginative, you might say.
Yeah, I have not seen this one, but it seemed like a perfect movie for Gondry to make. I remember when it came out, it's like, oh, this is the kind of movie he needs to be making. My number three-ish, we're going to stick in the 80s, go back to 82. I talked about Jim Henson not directing much. He's usually on the creature side, but not so much the directing side. But two movies he directed actually happen to be in my top five, where my number three is from 1982, co-directed by Jim Henson and Frank Oz. It is The Dark Crystal. Very much fantastical land again. I mean, in this one, you don't even have humans. You have Gelflings. It's a full puppet movie. It's not animated. It's not, you know, this is long before.
It's a feature.
It's a puppet feature. Yeah, it's, you know, it's not even like the Muppets where it was Muppets and humans. It's not, you know.
No humans.
Not long before computer animation. It was just, let's make a movie featuring Jim Henson's puppets. And it was awesome. It looked cool. The characters were cool. The story was probably far more awesome than you would expect from a puppet movie, to say it that way. Like, I hate saying it that way, but it was a puppet movie.
It's a puppet fantasy movie.
And it ruled.
Yeah,
I mean, the story, it gets dark. I mean, there's and I like that about fantasy. Like, Legend had its dark moments. The whole idea of Labyrinth was her getting her infant brother back that had been kidnapped. Dark Crystal falls in line with those. It's just a very cool movie. You got the Zexies, the Gelflings. The characters are cool. Like, you want them to do well. You want them to succeed. And the story's, it's dark. It's compelling. It's just a very, very cool story. And it's something visually that you're not seeing now. Nobody's going to do this now. Nobody barely did this after this. So it's just very cool visually to watch. And it feels like it feels like you're watching something special, and you really are. And it's a fantastic movie. Again, it's a timeless movie. This is from 1982. It's over 30 years old. My kids love it. I don't love it any less than I did when I first saw it. And I've seen it dozens of times. I watch it multiple times each year because I absolutely adore this movie. And it's something that I love watching with the kids, even though it's 32 years old. But it's definitely my favorite, in my top three-ish favorite fantasy movies.
This is the one that I kind of equate very similarly to Legend. I probably saw them both around the same time. And I mean, I think you're exactly right saying, like, it gets dark in the same way Legend does. Sometimes I forget which is which, but it's not a terrible thing because I know I like both movies. Dark Crystal, really, really a good flick. I think as a kid, I liked The Muppets a lot. And who wouldn't like The Muppets as a kid? But I think, you know, my parents were with it enough to say, all right, well, if you like The Muppets, you might like this Dark Crystal movie because it's made by the same people. And the same thing with Labyrinth. I think both of those movies I ended up seeing because I liked The Muppets, which, you know, came from Jim Henson's head. So obviously these other two were right in my wheelhouse at the time. And to this day, I still love Dark Crystal. I still love the damn Muppets, even though that second movie they did recently was not so good.
Not good.
I don't think that'll be on either of our lists. My number three is, I guess it's a bit of a strange movie. It is Stranger Than Fiction, starring Will Ferrell, Emma Thompson, Dustin Hoffman, directed by Mark Foster. Kind of an interesting flick here. You have Will Ferrell, who falls in love with Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, and he's a literary character. He's not a real guy. He starts kind of just going about his daily life, and he hears a voice inside of his head, which we later learn is the voice of the author, played by Emma Thompson, who's trying to write the best way for his character to die. And he kind of realizes this and becomes sort of a real boy at that point, and he wants to live. It's the first of two consecutive movies I have where they're literary characters that have come to life. And this one is told from the perspective of the character, how, you know, this character can not only live a life and try and avoid his impending death, which, you know, almost from the moment we meet him, we see is coming. And that's his whole reason for existence is to die to complete the narrative. I don't love Will Ferrell, but I thought he was really good in this movie. And I hate to, you know, put it in that genre of, like, isn't it great when you have comedic actors that don't do necessarily comedic roles and they're a little bit offbeat, but they're really good? You have your Eternal Sunshine. I feel like just about every comedic actor's got at least one of these if they have any talent. You know, Jim Carrey, Adam Sandler's done them. But I really do like Stranger Than Fiction. I wanted to see if Ferrell could do kind of a straighter role and see how that could be compared with, you know, what I had already seen from Jim Carrey. And I loved Eternal Sunshine, so I was just kind of hoping this could be somewhere in that ballpark. And it totally was. And I think the story is pretty rad. Like, you know, a guy that realizes that he's not real, but is interacting with real people.
This is my favorite Will Ferrell movie by far. I think this movie's fantastic. And I just like how it all plays out. Like, I really, really, really like this movie. My number two movie is another movie that I really, 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 really love from a director who, to me, has been perfect. He has never directed a movie that I haven't loved. It is the second feature film from Matthew Vaughn, a director who I absolutely adore. It is 2006's Stardust. starring Claire Danes, Charlie Cox, Michelle Pfeiffer, or 2007, sorry. Claire Danes, Michelle Pfeiffer, Robert De Niro, Ricky Gervais, Charlie Cox. Awesome, awesome movie. It's a movie that didn't make my top five, but it's probably most people in their top five favorite fantasy movies is Princess Bride for very, very good reason. It's a damn near flawless movie. I think Stardust is the closest we've had to Princess Bride since Princess Bride. It's a modern day on a more epic scale where Princess Bride, it was a more centered story. This, you introduce more world. Matthew Vaughn does a great job. I mean, between De Niro's pirate, the brothers that are all trying not to die first, Michelle Pfeiffer trying not to age, and then Claire Danes, who's a star that's fallen down to earth. And then I believe Sienna Miller is the bitchy girlfriend that sends him to get the star. Matthew Vaughn's direction and the whole world that he built is just amazing to watch. And I think the casting of Charlie Cox makes or breaks this movie because, yeah, you have De Niro, you have Pfeiffer, you have Claire Danes, you have all these names that are showing up to this movie. And then you have Charlie Cox, who was an unknown, who even to this day, I mean, he's going to be Daredevil for Netflix, but there's a part in the director's commentary where Matthew Vaughn talks about why he cast Charlie Cox. Like, Orlando Bloom wanted this role badly. But you know who Orlando Bloom is. You know what Orlando... He's Legolas. And you can't... Charlie Cox grows into a hero, and you don't know that. Like, you don't know what he can become at the beginning. So to watch his journey and watch what happens to him through this... just an amazing world. Stardust is absolutely... I think it's flawless. Like, I think it's just a great fantasy movie. Everything looks great. There's so many different side stories and B plots that keep you entertained, all while, you know, Charlie Cox and Claire Danes carry the show. And all the supporting roles are just done so perfectly without, you know, overshadowing anything. It's just such a good, great movie that I feel like kind of went unnoticed and underappreciated. And I feel like it still is. Like, I feel like there's not a lot of people that have actually taken the time to watch Stardust, and I really feel like you're missing out.
I agree. I like it an awful lot, too. And for me, this was kind of the test for Vaughn, because at that point, I mean, I had seen Layer Cake, and I loved it. Like Kick-Ass an awful lot. So, and he was going to direct X-Men, and this I had seen Stardust before X-Men, so I was like, all right. Well, the guy's two for two. This movie here looks like something I would not be interested in at all. But I'm going to watch it and see. Three for three after that movie.
Well, I saw this after, because this was right after Layer Cake. And
yeah.
I like Layer Cake enough that I was giving it the benefit of the doubt. Because to watch the trailer or hear about the story, no interest. No interest whatsoever. But I had that much trust in Layer Cake and the fact that he had worked on Lock, Stock, and Snatch that I wanted to give it a flyer, and I'm glad I did, because holy hell, I love this movie.
Oh, yeah, he had the track record. I think I was just having, like, visions of Ever After dancing in my head, and I was like, nope, not doing it. But, yeah, it's much better than that. My number two, as I said, I've got two in a row that are about literary characters that come to life. This one, in kind of a, I don't know if it's a sort of a meta, Zoe Kazan wrote and then played title character, Ruby Sparks, directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, starring Zoe Kazan, Paul Dano, Annette Bening. It's got a really great cast. Chris Messina is really good as the brother. Antonio Banderas, the Coogs, is in there as well. Stranger Than Fiction was from the perspective of the literary character. This is more from Paul Dano, who's the writer, and he has a dream about this girl, and he writes it down, because that's what he does. He's a writer. Having writer's block, not unlike the writer from Stranger Than Fiction. And basically through writing the character of writing the character of Ruby Sparks, she comes to life and becomes his real-life girlfriend. And then he's kind of knowing that he's created her and knowing that he can make her do and act however he wants, and all he has to do is type it. He's sort of conflicted about, you know, should I just leave her as she is, or do I need to kind of tweak her from there? again, this was kind of one that on the surface, really, outside of the cast, all of which I really, really like, I wasn't necessarily sure that it would be a flick for me. But I thought it was really, really good after seeing it, and I couldn't wait to put it on the list. It was actually one of the very first ones that I thought of, because this character is born completely out of his imagination. And when he starts telling people about it, his therapist, his brother, that, you know, I created this girl just by thinking about her, they think he's nuts. And then when they actually meet her and can see that he can manipulate her, then it they're all kind of on board. But yeah, really, really good flick. I like Paul Dano a lot. He's very good in this. And Zoe Kazan's got some... There's one specific scene where they have a fight that she's kind of turning on a dime, which I thought was probably very difficult to do.
She speaks fluid French.
She does, yes. And she speaks fluid French. So really kind of a good flick. I think this might be another one that's maybe under the radar. But in terms of a movie that's about imagination... It's one of the best ones I can think of.
See, now I'm just mad that we didn't just do an imagination movie, because I love this movie too. And Paul Dano is so good, especially in these kind of roles. And Zoe Kazan, I realize she wrote it for herself, but so good, so interesting as like a lead female character. Very, very cool movie. I don't think your number one is going to be the same as what my number one was, but I'm going to talk about what my number one would be anyway. My number one for my list, though, that I'm doing as how I took the list, obvious, from 1988. I think this is the first list where I've ever had all five movies in the 80s. From 1988.
I've got one of those coming up.
Directed by Ron Howard. Story by George Lucas. Starring Warwick Davis, Val Kilmer, Mrs. Val Kilmer for a while. A whole bunch of people. Kevin Pollak. It is Willow. Willow's one of my favorite movies of all time. I will say that over and over again. And the only knock on it is how I was talking about Dark Crystal and Legend and even Stardust, Labyrinth. Like, you watch them now, they're timeless. Willow, for the most part, is that. But some of the brownies, some of the effects on the brownies are pretty weak. But other than that...
At the time, they were great.
At the time, they were great. But now you look at them, it's like, eh. And I mean, the brownies were always my least favorite part about it anyway. So,
do you want George Lucas to go back?
I want him to cut in Hayden Christensen as the brownies.
Yeah, exactly. And have them shoot first.
Yeah. But I just... Everything about this movie, you have Willow, your unlikely hero, just trying to do what's right. You have Mad Mardigan, the perfect anti-hero.
You're Han Solo with a sword.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when you think of anti-heroes, Han Solo and Mad Mardigan, except Mad Mardigan will always swing first. Mad Mardigan's so perfect. This is Val Kilmer at his Val Kilmeriest, and it's depressing that Val Kilmer's a punchline now, because you watch him in this movie, and he's so flawless. He's so good. And then Joanne Whaley is the conflicted villain. Very, very cool movie. There's so many layers. There's so many things going on. It's an epic. I mean, that's the one. It's just like Stardust. Stardust is amazingly epic, and this is just as epic. You have dragons. You have big, epic fight scenes. You have great character work. Just everything.
Some magic in there.
Yeah, everything about this movie is so good, and I just love it so much. And like, I want to do it. I'm dying for an excuse to do a to do a Willow episode, because I love it so much. Another one. Every one of these movies I've watched with my kids, and every one of these movies my kids love, and Willow's no exception. It's just something about this genre. Like, I don't like a lot of fantasy movies, because I think it's something that's very easy to get wrong.
When they're done well, they're amazing.
Yes. It's something very, very easy to get wrong. But when you get it right, it's hard not to love it. And I absolutely love it, because I'll talk more after you give your number one, because I feel like I left off some pretty obvious ones, and I just want to explain why. But Willow, it's definitely a top 10 movie ever for me, if only for just watching Val Kilmer. Like, Val Kilmer is Mad Mardigan in this movie. It's probably one of my favorite acting performances ever. One of my favorite movie characters ever. Just it's so great. And it fits this movie, because I don't think at any point it overshadows anything. I think he steals the show without detracting from anything else.
I like Willow a lot. That's one of the first ones that comes to mind when you think of like traditional kind of fantasy movies, and really the reason that I put this list together and then decided to change my mind. But when I changed my mind, I started thinking about movies that are about imagination. Ruby Sparks came to mind very quickly, but it was actually beaten to my mind by a movie that just came out last year. It is my number one. And Dave is perked up.
I was going to say, this would have been my number one.
He knows exactly what it is. Starring and directed by Ben Stiller, written by Steve Conrad. It's A Secret Life of Walter Mitty, also starring Kristen Wiig, who's tremendous in it, as well as John Daly. Lots of good people in this flick.
Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt. Adam Scott. Sure, Sean Penn. Yeah, we could be here for a while. As much as I'm kind of on the fence about how I feel about Will Ferrell, I'm kind of the same way about Ben Stiller. Can sort of take him or leave him. But I thought he was phenomenal in this movie as a guy who pretends that he's some great adventurer, that his life is full of, you know, getting the girl, being able to talk to the girl and heroism, where really his life is experiencing that through the photographs that are taken by other people. And then he sort of, in order to get this last photo, the one photo that he's ever lost in his time of being an archivist, he has to actually go track down, and he goes through an adventure that's probably more radical than what he's had in his mind the whole time. It's really, really a fun movie. And you don't, I mean, you see his character grow, but it's not like by leaps and bounds. It's by just a little bit. You can kind of see the same character, the same Walter, throughout the whole thing. He's just being willing to go do more things.
And Stiller was fantastic in this movie, because it's kind of like he's not making his life different. His life is just being different.
It's dragging him along.
And he's the same guy, just along for the ride. So his life is changing drastically, but like, he's still Walter Mitty. And I'm glad this is your number one, because we're going to talk about it regardless, because it would have been my number one on this. Because talk about under the radar movies, like, this came out last year around Christmas.
Right on Christmas.
I think was horribly under noticed. I believe this movie, it's fantastic. Like, unfortunately, I didn't see it until after we had made our list for last year. This would have been near the top, because I'm not a Ben Stiller guy. I don't hate Ben Stiller, but I don't love Ben Stiller, and he has to be great for me to rave about Ben Stiller. He's great in this. The screenplay by Steve Conrad. I love the story, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. I absolutely love it. And this took it. It modernized it. It took it a different way. It made it more of a human story. Because you think back, there was the Don Knotts version where he's talking to cartoons and everything. This humanized it and made it. I could go on about this movie, because Ben Stiller as Walter Mitty was great. Ben Stiller as a director, whoa, like, where did this come from? Where did this Ben Stiller as a director come from? Because I want to see this a lot. This movie is gorgeous. This is a beautiful movie. It's shot so gorgeously. Like, it looks amazing. The fantasy stuff is great. The real life stuff, the shark scene. Like, I want this Ben Stiller directing a lot of movies. Like, I really do. I don't even care if he's in them. Like, it was so beautifully directed that even if you hate Ben Stiller, I think it's easy to overlook it. The whole Patton Oswalt angle was probably my favorite thing. You know, I like Kristen Wiig. Just everything about this movie, the whole story about, I mean, talk about modernizing it. Like, it took it and put it into very, it took Time Magazine, like, going out of print pretty much. And it's very, very cool story. I love this movie. I think it's about to debut on the movie channels, and I hope it finds a new life, because I just feel like it kind of just came and went.
It got buried. It came out on Christmas, and I'm looking at the movies that came out that same week. Believe, Grudge Match, 47 Ronin. Also, The Wolf of Wall Street came out that week. But already in theaters, you had...
Last year was a heavy year.
It was. The Hobbit was still around. Frozen, which was out. Anchorman, American Hustle, Saving Mr. Banks. The Hunger Games was still around. There were a lot of things in the theaters at that point. And I do think that Walter Mitty just kind of got lost in the shuffle because I don't think people really knew what kind of a movie it was.
And it's a shame because I often talk about release date strategies. Like Edge of Tomorrow, you take that out of this summer and put it in like March, yeah. and it makes a lot of money. I don't feel that's a case here because this is the perfect Christmas Day movie. Something I can go to with my mom, I can take the kids, I can go with my friends. This is a movie for everybody, and this deserves to open on 10 Christmases in a row before 47 Ronin should even get a date. This movie is so good, and it's an absolute perfect Christmas Day movie that it really is depressing that it kind of went unnoticed. Hopefully it finds another life.
Or even in DVD.
I know I'm excited for it to premiere on movie channels because it's one of those that if it's on, I'm going to turn it on. I don't care at what point. It's a gorgeous-looking movie. If you want to be a human for 2 hours and just jump along for the ride, like, it's a gorgeous experience. It's a very human story, and it just makes you feel good to be, like, makes you feel good to be alive, I think. And maybe that's hyperbole. That's how much I enjoyed this movie. Like, it made you feel good. It's the perfect feel-good story.
It's a real good movie, yeah. It's my favorite fantasy movie of all time.
It would have been my number one if I'd have known we were doing that. A couple obvious ones on mine that I left off. Princess Bride, just because I like the other five more. Black Cauldron, one of my favorite cartoons. My favorite Disney movie ever. It just didn't make the cut. And then I think Lord of the Rings were obvious ones, but
those were obvious ones. When
I didn't want to pick one,
right.
Even though it would be Two Towers. Like, I don't have a problem, but it'd be hard not to put all three of them on there.
When I had my original list, I was kind of wrestling with the same thing. And then I was like, well, no, I'm just – because really my favorite is the Hobbit cartoon from the 70s. I love that. That's what would have been my favorite. As much as I like the newer Hobbit movies, I still like that better than anything I've seen thus far. I think the new one's going to be rad as hell. But I feel like most of the movies we've mentioned, I definitely would have had Legend. I would have had The Hobbit. The Princess Bride is one of my favorite movies of all time, so that probably would have either made my list or been one that I left off just not to be redundant. Cull, I like an awful lot. To go with the more traditional definition of fantasy, I like Excalibur quite a bit as well.
Excalibur's a good one. Lady Hawk, I mentioned earlier, those two. And then I don't consider them fantasy movies, but in a Google search of best fantasy movies, the Harry Potter movies came up.
Harry Potter and Wizard of Oz were two that I saw.
I love the Harry Potter movies. I just didn't want – I don't know. I guess I don't consider them fantasy, even though they 100% are.
Yeah, wizards and stuff.
Yeah, I consider them something completely different, and my top five would probably just be four of those movies and Willow, so I left off Harry Potter.
It's a lot of magic wands or something.
Yeah. That's our favorite fantasy movies.
Use your imagination. Let us know what your favorite fantasy movie is. In case you really liked, I don't know, Dragonheart?
Kroll?
Yeah.
Or there was Red Sonja?
Yeah. Well, I think I already said Kroll, but.
You did.
Yeah. Red Sonja. That's a good one. If you like the Conan joints, one of those is really good. I think.
The Momoa one?
Yep. That's the one. Let us know. moviesonup@gmail.com. Facebook.com/moviesonup or @moviesonup on the Twitter.
And more importantly, the reason we did fantasy movies is Fantasy Film Ball. That draft, our draft episode will air next week. The deadline is next Thursday. So if you want to play Fantasy Film Ball, get us your entries at any other ways Ryan said, preferably moviesonup@gmail.com so I can keep them organized. Quick rundown of the rules. Check the website. There will be a blog up by now about the rules. Pick five movies releasing between September 16th and December 31st. You get 1 point for every $10 million made at the domestic box office through January, 2 points for every Oscar or Golden Globe nomination, and 3 points for every Oscar or Golden Globe win. It's our third year going. Ryan and I have each won one. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a weird year. This is a very, very weird year for it, which we'll talk about on our draft episode next week. But, yeah, play film ball with us. Get your entries in before our draft if you want, unless you want to hear us fake our way as experts. Listen to that. You still have a couple days.
Yeah, I would do yours before you listen to us.
Don't let us taint your opinions.
Yeah.
But we'll be back next week with the Fantasy Film Ball draft, and then after that is our 8-episode October. So very, very cool things coming up. And until then,
you're on the clock. Keep it up.